to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzin takes the snap. Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown.
And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, John Schmelt.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to join the conversation that way. I am back, thankfully, after only one day absence of jury duty. Never actually got questioned by anybody. Sat in the room for about 5 hours. Apparently, all the cases got settled. Got sent home after a half day. So, good news for me. Bad news for you, because that means I'm back. But I got to tell you, the legal system missed out on one hell of a juror. They don't know what they're missing. But what you're not missing is the presence of one Paul Dottino, who joins us this morning on Big Blue Kickoff. Paulie Dots.
John, I don't know what those folks were thinking. You are a fair, level-headed person.
My judgment's unmatched.
Who would have brought so much to the table in that jury box?
No, I appreciate that. Now, they did have pictures of you up on the wall, and it was like, you know, do not approach this man, do not allow him into the courtroom, you know, things like that.
You know, the one time that I got called in for grand jury duty, which is folks in the area know, you get called one day a week for the whole day over the course of many months. It was really, really, really difficult to sit in the room for the day and not get outside and just have to be like, oh!
Well, I can't imagine you sitting in one place in any sort of jury box or room or seat for more than like a half hour at a time.
I mean, and you have to be quiet because you need to listen to the prosecutor and you need to listen to the accused.
And nobody's talking about the Giants. How can you focus?
It's hard.
Paul is the walker, after all. It's hard from the sit in one place at one time.
Okay.
201-939-4513. The Giants did make some news late yesterday. Let's get right into it.
Yeah, they did.
They announced the signing of a couple of veterans. They bring back Mike Patterson, which I think all of us kind of expected to happen, a very valuable role player off the bench last year. He'll serve as that again. He can play the one technique. He can play the three technique. They'll play, you know, 20 or 30 snaps a game and do a very good job in that rotation at defensive tackle. And they also add veteran cornerback Zach Bowman, who was with the Bears last year, as they add even more depth at cornerback. I guess, Paul, they're trying to protect themselves this year against that 1 week period in training camp every year where it seems like six cornerbacks get hurt.
Yeah, exactly, John. You know, you look at it, and Zach Bowman is a three, maybe a four on a lot of teams.
Which
right
is fine.
Now, right now, he might be a five for the Giants.
I'd say he's behind McBride. I agree with that.
I would think so. McBride started 10 games for this team last year. They were very happy with him.
He started 10?
And they brought him back.
Was it that many?
Well, yeah.
Wow.
Corey Webster was out for almost
a
whole
year. I
guess
so, yeah.
He had one and one token appearance.
And then Ross got hurt in week six or seven.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes sense.
So
I didn't think it was that many. Wow.
You know, when you consider what the Giants have done, adding Thurmond, okay, and now Bowman, and McBride's in the mix. Those are your three backup corners to Rogers, Cromartie, and Prince. Those are five guys who have all got decent resumes in this league. I mean, they've all played. They've all played at a high level. They've played on some winning teams and won some games. You know, it's hard for me to say right now that anybody has more depth at corner, certainly in the NFC, than the Giants do.
And then throw in a third-round pick like J'Ron Hosley, an undrafted free agent in a second year like Charles James, and you got a nice little group there.
Well, and as you said, the injury bug seems to focus on the Giants' corners every summer. So they have fortified that spot tenfold.
And I'll tell you what, the Giants are going to need some corners because this division is looking even tougher now where, you know, the Pro Football Talk story this morning is that DeSean Jackson to Washington is pretty much a done deal at this point, and it could be as official as early as today. And it's funny, during the offseason, we joked that I thought the Redskins could go after Akeem Nicks. I thought it was a Redskins type of move. Well, quite frankly, I'm going to give the Redskins credit. They showed some patience. They went after the better guy in the division, DeSean Jackson, at least in terms of a player.
That's true.
Obviously, a lot of off-the-field baggage with DeSean Jackson has never scared the Redskins away before from some of these guys. So now they've taken Jason Hatcher away from the Cowboys. They've taken DeSean Jackson away from the Eagles. And boy, you know, RG3, no more excuses, Paul. You go out there with Jordan Reed at tight end, Garcon and DeSean Jackson on the outside, a veteran like Santana Moss in the slot, throw in Aljic Robinson, who's a big deep threat for that team, and boy, that is one hell of a receiver core. And then throw Alfred Morris into the mix, too. That Redskin offense, if RG3 can put it together, is going to be pretty tough.
And what does it all come down to, though, John? You got to be able to protect.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And, you know, ultimately, a guy like RG3 who has gone through his injury troubles is going to need time to operate. And I don't care what anybody says, John. In my mind, unless he becomes a better pocket passer and a better pocket quarterback, ultimately it will be his downfall. And he's going to have to do it.
And quite frankly, I thought he regressed. I thought he was worse in year two than he was in year one. I'm
coming
not
off
sure
the injury.
If he couldn't push off or plant because of the knee and things like that, it's hard to tell. But I think this is a seminal year in his career. He's going to have to step up and really improve.
Well, that's why I had people around the NFL tell me last year that they thought it was a mistake to rush him back as quickly as they did.
Yeah.
And then when they brought him back, Shanahan continued to use the run option and the rollout stuff consistent basis, even though, A, it didn't look like his quarterback was physically able to play at the level he was accustomed, and B, when everybody in the league knows that if RG3 continues to play that kind of ball or that style of ball, he's going to get killed, and he'll never last in the long term. Ultimately, he's got to learn how to be a better pocket quarterback, or he won't have longevity, and he won't have success in this league, at least not sustained success.
To bouncing back to the Giants moves for a second, we touched on Bowman. On Patterson, I know a lot of Giant fans are slowly migrating, it seems, to jumping on that Aaron Donald bandwagon at 12 for a defensive tackle. I think a lot of people are afraid Mike Evans isn't going to be there at 12. I know a lot of Giant fans are excited about him. Some Giant fans not as excited about a tight end there. Some not as excited about an offensive lineman there. And they think they could use some replenishment on the defensive line. Now, obviously, Jerry Reese is well known for picking defensive linemen high in drafts. It's done it time and time again, whether you're talking about Jason Pierre-Paul, Jonathan Hankins, DeMontre Moore. Go through the list up and down. He's done it a bunch. Linval Joseph, another guy. But he hasn't picked a defensive tackle in the first round. In fact, the Giants haven't done that since they picked one of Paul's favorite Giants of all time, William Joseph, back in the early 2000s in the first round. That didn't work out too much. Odds, Paul, you think, and does the Patterson affect this calculation at all of selecting a guy like Aaron Donald in the first round, who is certainly talented enough to go at 12. He's an excellent player, great production in college, but do you think the Giants would go in that direction at that position in the first round of the draft?
It lessens the need factor.
Right.
There's no doubt about that because you have an accomplished player who's done it before.
Though that's the need this year. And you know Jerry Reese's penchant for looking ahead.
True.
Colin Jenkins, only 2 years left on his deal. He's getting older. Patterson, a veteran. You are going to have to fill that three-technique defensive tackle spot eventually. And Donald does profile as the perfect guy to do that.
All right, let me give you a little background. The Giants offered Mike Patterson the one-year minimum contract or whatever the terms turned out to be, and I don't think it's much more than that, if that. They offered that to him quite a while ago. And they told him, we'd like to have you back. It's not going to be a lot of money, but we like you. We want you. What do you think? And Mike Patterson told him, hold on. I want to go outside, look at other opportunities, see if I can get more snaps somewhere else, see if I can get more money somewhere
else. Which is fair.
Sure it is. He earned that right.
Yeah.
I mean, his contract was up. Now, I think what happened was because he was able to come back and say, okay, before the draft that I'm coming back in, I do think that gives the Giants peace of mind and perhaps does alter their thoughts about the defensive tackle spot. Because had he waited till the back end after the draft or after June 1st, the Giants may have said, look, we're still thinking about a possible need there. We'd like one more body. And maybe that door closes on Mike Patterson. Or maybe Mike Patterson told the Giants, I'd like to solidify my spot. I don't want to go too much longer with this. I'm happy here. You guys want me here. Let's get this done. I don't want to worry about it.
Because right now the Giants have a pretty solid four-man rotation of defensive tackle. You have Patterson who can swing between Hankins and Jenkins as a backup. You have Marcus Kuhn who could do a little bit of both. And then you have your two starter in Hankins and Jenkins. That's a nice little four-man rotation of defensive tackle. And I'm not even sure you can afford to carry five defensive tackles in this day and age.
No, you really can't. Now, Hankins and Kuhn are a bit unproven. We have to admit to that. We like what we see out of those guys.
That's correct.
But they clearly are unproven. But yes, you have to believe the Giants feel fairly comfortable with those four guys. I do think it lessens the need. We talked about Donald on yesterday's show, John, while you were out. And it was brought up, and he's an intriguing pick because I do think he's a very talented player.
I think he's going to be an excellent pro.
And 12 would be just about the right spot for him.
I agree with that as well.
You know, I couldn't have faulted Jerry Reese if he went that way, given the thinness of his defensive tackle spot. As I've said to people time and time again, address the trenches. And if you're not going to go defensive line isn't a bad way. Because to me, it's always about the trenches.
201-939-4513. On that note, let's get to our phone calls. By the way, Eric Kennedy from Big Blue Interactive will join us for a couple minutes at the top of the hour to kind of see where Giant fans' heads are at here heading into the 2014 draft. Just over a month away. Not a month quite yet, but we're getting there.
Month and a half.
You're less than that. I don't want you to get too depressed over there. It's about 5 weeks.
What are you going to do, John?
Are you holding up okay?
I've been doing some more film study. I checked out some guys. By the way, we should get back to this for 1 second.
All right, what do you got?
Yesterday, there were a couple of guys who asked me about some certain players they wanted me to take a look at. And I just wanted to mention this to you briefly before we got to everybody else. Somebody wanted to know about Hoskins, M. Farmer 20. Asked me about Gator Hoskins.
He's obsessed with Gator Hoskins.
Tight end out of Marshall. He's undersized. He's played a lot of fullback at Marshall. What I saw from him.
Good production in college.
Wonderful production.
Yeah.
Good hands. Athleticism. Does seem to get open in his pass routes.
How big is he?
That's the problem. He's only about 6'1". He measures at 6'2", or actually they say he's 6'2", but he measured closer to 6'1".
What does he weigh?
I think only about 250.
6'1", 250. I know you're not tall, but you have some mass to you at 6'1",
245, 250.
250. All right.
But here's the thing, John. When I watched him, productive, no question about it, and he could certainly get after the ball, and I like that. But these tweener guys bother me.
Okay, that's fair.
And a lot of people are projecting him to be a fullback in the NFL. To me, he's a good undrafted free agent stab. After the draft is done for 3 days, if you're still saying, well, we might want to take a shot with somebody at tight end. We're looking for another guy who could maybe fill it out. You take a shot. If he has a great camp, maybe he sticks. But I don't know that I would draft him. So that was one guy I wanted to address. The other fellow, let's see, was it was Alex Bazzi. I'm not sure how he says it. He's a linebacker, defensive end. Another undersized guy.
3-4 outside linebacker.
One of those Adrian Trayson mold guys.
Yeah.
Okay? He wears number 53 at Marshall, by the way. And you look at his cut-ups. Wow. I mean, absolutely wow. In Conference USA, he was too fast, too quick, and too elusive coming off the line for those guys to deal with him. The problem is, guys in the NFL are bigger, stronger, faster. I'm not so sure.
What is he, about 245, 250?
Oh, golly. You know what, John? I didn't look at his – I think, yeah, he's probably about 6'2", 6'3", and 245.
Yeah.
He's one of those kinds.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly who that type of guy
is. I tend to shy away from tweeners. That's right. Not my style, but –
as a late-round flyer, might be worth a shot.
He hits like a Mack truck, okay? And
his enthusiasm.
Some of the cutouts I saw of him on special teams, wow, he gets down there. He's a quicker, more athletic version of Herzlick on kickoff coverage. So would I look at him as an undrafted free agent? Absolutely. For special teams purposes. I don't think I could play him in the defense,
right,
though.
Two good nuggets. Let's get to our phone calls at 201-939-4513. You've been waiting patiently. We'll take your calls in the order in which they were received, and we'll start with Matt in East Islip. Matt, what's going on?
Paul, I tweeted to you yesterday, told you I'd call in and talk about one of our favorite guys, Arthur Lynch.
Yeah. Love him.
So, excited to talk about him because, like I said, I've seen him play live at the Georgia Tech game. As soon as I saw him come out of the tunnel, I said, "This guy's going to be a giant." He has that look. I think he would fit into the scheme. I know John and I called and brought it up one time, and you said I don't really see it, but I think he would be a good fit. From what I saw, he's pretty athletic. He's pretty athletic, and I think he has the potential to be a really good run blocker.
I love him, and I'm with you 1,000% on that. I've been telling people that if fourth-round pick, he'd be outstanding there. I don't think he's going to go higher than that. He's got all of the things that the traditional Giants offense wants. You know what, though? There's one small caveat that I have to add. And, John, I don't want to take too much of the caller's time, I want to address this. I get a lot of hate Twitter or hate tweet about Ebron. People who want Ebron, the North Carolina tight end, who is an outstanding catching or receiving tight end.
He's an athlete.
But, yes, but has shown some deficiencies in his blocking game.
No question.
Had trouble with drops. He's at pro day.
Correct.
And quite honestly, I think shows the attitude that he really wants to be an ESPN SportsCenter highlight guy. I'm not so sure he's going to devote himself to being the all-around tight end that the Giants need or use. And blocking is an issue for me. Well, and Carlos, stay with me here for a second because this goes to your point, Matt. Matt, Lynch is more of the Jake Ballard type of tight end that the Giants have won with. It is the traditional old-school tight end that I believe in, that I grew up on, more of the Bavaro type as well. And, again, I'm not going to compare his talent to Bavaro, but he's that style of guy.
Right, Matt. Matt, Paul, I just want to help both of you guys out of here for a second, all right?
Yeah,
this is the NFL.com scouting report on Arthur Lynch, okay? This is, I think, Daniel Jeremiah does these, if I'm not mistaken, off of their website. Strengths, good size, functional short to intermediate target, competitive, willing to engage and compete as an inline blocker, special teams experience, hardworking, and football smart, tough, and durable. Okay, those are all pretty good things. Now, here are the weaknesses.
I would take that any day of the week.
No, I hear you, but look, listen to this. Yeah. Not yet ready to match physically one-on-one with NFL defensive ends. Can improve base and leverage. Average quickness off the line. Pedestrian foot speed. Tight hips, unsudden, cannot separate, shaky hands with too many drops, need to improve his route running, straight line-ish after the catch, thinks he's better than he is. Those are some big minuses, and it says they project him as a seventh-round pick or a free agent priority.
All right.
How are you going to draft this guy and expect him to play this year?
If you watch him, John, if you watch him, he's better than that, and I've got no problem taking him in the fourth round, and if you think you can get him in the fifth round, fine, get him in the fifth round.
You think you could plug him in and start him this year?
I didn't say you can start right away.
Well,
but
that's what you need.
I know Giants need three tight ends, maybe two, if you want to say one of these guys is going to come back. They need at least two.
Yeah, but you need a guy that can get in there and start.
This guy can take reps. They can strengthen him up. They can coach him up. I like him.
If you want to take Arthur Lynch as a third day, fifth or sixth round pick and have him be your number two
third
blocking tight end,
starts
I
in
understand
the
that. I know. I'm just saying, if you want to pick him and he's your number two blocking tight end and, you know, goal line and short yardage and you're number one, I'm fine with that. I'm not taking the position and putting it in this guy's hands.
Anyway, the point being, and this is important, Matt, to understand, and I've said this before, and I've tried to explain this to the Twitterverse as well, if the Giants are going to give the new offensive coordinator, McAdoo, a significant, and I mean significant say in this offense—
Right.
And, on top of that, if they believe that the offensive line, as presently constructed, is good enough to get the job done, then it would not surprise me if they took Ebron, okay? I personally would not go that way. But let me make it very clear. If the Giants believe in those other two conditions, then Ebron is absolutely the logical and correct pick based on that philosophy. I just don't happen to share that philosophy as I sit here this morning.
Right. I agree with you 100%, Paul. I think he would be a good fit. And just real quick, one more thing I have to add, and I'll take your comments off the air, and I appreciate the show. What do you guys, I've heard so many things about Rogers Cromartie, how they have a specific plan, and I like to call the Legion of Doom now.
Because wasn't that what the Seahawks did with their guys?
They were the Legion of
Boom. Legion of Boom.
I got you. That's right.
Now we got the Doom. We got I think one of the deepest secondaries in the league now. I think they're going to be ball hawks in Perry Fuel's system. I think it's going to be fun to watch. But what do you guys see is going to be the specific plan for DRC? I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate the call, Matt.
You know, it's funny, John. Look at what the Giants have done with the corners. It's not just the guys they've signed. Bowman's a 6'1 guy. Cromartie, I think, is 6'1.
He's about 6'1, yeah.
Okay. Prince is a 6-footer.
Did you see that video, by the way, Prince posted of throwing down that alley-oop dunk?
I did not.
It was pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah, he's showing
in a game or just on the school
just practicing, screwing around.
Giants have gotten some size now. at that corner spot, which, again, is part of that Seattle model.
Though Dominique Rodgers-Kamari, not exactly captain physical at the line of scrimmage.
No. No. But he's sticky.
He is. No, he is. No question
about it. He's sticky. And I think the other thing I want you to recognize, too, and you'll notice this as these guys start to play, and maybe in practice at a camp, good length.
They are long. Dominique Rodgers-Kamari, I did notice that he's a very lanky guy. Very lanky.
Prince has good length, too. Bowman has good length. Even Thurman, you know, I think it was 5'11".
5'11", I think. Yeah,
but he's got good length for 5'11". You know, you look at this Giants team, and you say to yourself, well, these corners, they've gone the other way, John. I think they realize that they can't afford to buy a pass-rushing defensive end. I mean, free agency is just not going to bring them that kind of guy. You're probably not going to draft a stud defensive end at pass rusher in this draft because they're really not there.
You might get a guy in the second round. There's a couple guys that are ranked in the second round.
I'm a Kareem Martin guy out of North Carolina, but you're talking about someone who's going to plug in right away and be part of that pass rush. If you're going to be skeptical about that, I don't know that I can prove to you he's going to be an instant 10-sack guy.
Well, I'm not sure if you're finding an instant 10-sack guy in this year's draft.
But they need more pass rush.
Right.
So you have two ways to skin the cat here. Either you get that huge pass rush going like they did with Spags and like they did with Perry a few years ago when they went to the Super Bowl and won it, or you do what Seattle did, and you have what is just an above-average defensive line with a pretty decent pass rush coupled with a very tall, long secondary that's physical, that gets after receivers. You know, you hold up the targets, and that's how you affect the rhythm of the passing game. The Giants, I think, have gone to that philosophy, realizing that there's no guarantee they're going to get more than 35 or 40 sacks. Really?
And then you can blitz more, which is nothing wrong with that. 201-939-4513. And I said this last week, and I didn't say it to you because I figured you'd get upset and you think it's sacrilege. You know what model the Giants are using in terms of their defense? They're going to do what the Jets did a few years ago, where they have two shutdown corners. They don't have any individual pass rushers. They manufacture pass pressure, but you rely on your corners and your secondary to do the heavy lifting for you. That's what it is.
I never thought of it that way, but there's certainly characteristics there.
Obviously, 3-4-4-3 for things like that. But nevertheless, it's you rely on your secondary to shut guys down man on man, and then you figure out a way to get pressure by blitzing.
And I do think that the Giants will use some 3-4 stuff in their sub-package right now because the way that this team has been designed and the strength of the back seven, specifically in the secondary, would lead you to believe that there'll be times that they may only go with three down linemen, and they may go with an extra backer or an extra safety in terms of that blitz package like you're talking about. Because, let's face it, if you go to blitz, you need speedy athletic guys who are going to get home.
201-939-4513. Jason of Montreal has been holding the second longest. Jason, what's going on?
Hey, John. What's going on, Big?
How are you?
Good, buddy. Good, buddy. Listen, I'm not keep up too long here. For one, you guys need to get a 1-800 number. Yo, straight up. Tell Lance maybe take a pay cut or something and set that up because yo, this is long, son. No, I'm playing, but anyway, this is good. My question, real quick. In regards to Ndamukong Suh, right, if he was in this draft, where do you think he would fall?
If Ndamukong Suh was in this draft, where would he get picked? He would probably get picked right in the – besides the quarterbacks, he'd probably be the third player off the board after Sammy Watkins and Jadeveon Clowney, I'd say. He'd be right in that area with those, like, top-tier non-quarterback guys.
The Lions, okay. Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah.
Talking about.
Yeah, yeah. If he was in the draft this year, how would he compare to some of the prospects in this year's draft? And I think he'd be right in that first tier with Clowney, with Sammy Watkins, Khalil Mack. I think he'd be right in that group.
Except that given the troubles that he's had over the last few years, if those were included in the package, there would be some teams that wouldn't even have him on the board.
That's fair.
Okay, so compared to Aaron Donald, how would you compare those two?
I think their production is similar. The difference between Donald and Sue is that Donald is a much smaller guy. He has some physical limitations that Ndamukong Suh doesn't. He's managed to overcome those. But, you know, Sue's what? Probably like 6'3", 6'4". Donald's only 6 foot, barely 6'1".
Bigger frame, bigger package.
About 295, exactly. Sue's a much bigger body, but Donald's production and skills are probably right near and close to his.
Okay, so this is what I'm thinking. What, Donald go like what, like 15 or something?
Donald should go, but somewhere between 10 and 14 is kind of where he's falling on a lot of these drafts.
So if let's say Donald, Mike Evans, and Ebron are up for the Giants pick. I think to trade back and try to get an extra pick somewhere, pick up Darnold, say, in the 14th, and then go for Nicklaus in second. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're running a risk at trading down at 12-1. I don't think all three of those guys will be on the board. I think more than likely one, at best two guys will be there from those three you mentioned when the Giants pick at 12. And, hell, at this point, there's even a chance none of those three guys could be there at 12, the way I see some of these draft boards breaking down. So, I mean, Jason, you just don't know going in. I'm not opposed to trading down if you don't see a player there that you think is the perfect fit and you want to go down to the, you know, mid-teens and, you know, try to pick up an extra three or an extra two, something like that. I'm not against that. Okay. But I would be very leery of passing up a player that you think is a great value at 12 and a future Pro Bowler just to get another pick. I'm not sure I would mess around with that.
Jason, I would only say this. Yesterday I was asked a similar question, and I promised that I would give it more thought. And coming back today, I would not move more than four spots down.
16 is your limit?
That's my absolute limit for anybody. Sure. I'm not going down
anybody
beyond 16 for anybody. And even to do
that,
I'm very, very hesitant to even do that.
Yeah.
Now, to move down four spots, you're going to have to give me a two, or I'm not going there.
But that's why I'm saying if Donald's available by that by the 12th pick, and you think that I think it's the Rams after. I don't know if the Rams need a defensive tackle, but if that's the case, technically speaking, we could still go to, let's say, 13 or 14, and still pick up an extra thing. Because look, the way I see it is like, what's that girl's name there who blasted Shakes?
Kashawn.
Yeah, baby girl, honestly, if you want, you could come up to Canada. Forget all these other Americans. Come up to Canada. We'll eat puts in. We'll have puts in together, and we'll enjoy free Medicare. That's what I'm saying.
Jason, appreciate the call, buddy.
But, you know, one thing real quick.
Yeah, real fast.
Is that we should really look into getting maybe a Donald, or if not Ebron. That's what I'm saying. Because Ebron is going to be a big ass regardless.
All right, thanks, Jason.
Take my call.
Appreciate it, man.
All right.
Your phone was crapping out there a little bit at the end, but Jason's funny. Kashawn has made quite a splash in the Giants chat Twitter world.
Okay.
She's a lot of our guys hot and bothered on Twitter.
Oh.
Yes.
And because?
She's an excellent call. She knows her Giants stuff. She's impressed the masses.
Oh, I thought you said she bothered them.
No, they're hot and bothered.
Oh, I got you.
You understand what I'm saying now?
Okay, that's fine.
I can draw you a diagram if you want.
No? Not necessary.
Back to the phones. We're going to go to Maverick in Queens next. He's been holding. Maverick, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
What's going on, Maverick?
Hello. Yes, I was calling regarding about Mike Evans. I know that the Giants are top priority or wide receiver. I think Mike Evans would be a great fit for them.
Well, Maverick, I'm not sure if their top priority is wide receiver. I'd argue that tight end's a bigger priority. I could argue that defensive end is a bigger priority. I could argue even that offensive line is a bigger priority. I think they'd like to add somebody, but I don't think with Victor Cruz and Ruben Randall already in place that wide receiver is their biggest hole on this roster. I really don't.
What about the lines, like the offensive and the defensive lines, especially the offensive line to keep Eli upright because that line was horrible this year.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why I said I think offensive line and defensive end could both be bigger priorities than wide receiver.
Is this a multiple choice question?
No, I was just I like the wide receivers that we had. I'm sorry that we got rid of Nix, but we need a home run hitter. But I think that the offensive line is the main priority with them. Because Eli was horrible last year as far as no time to do anything.
No, Maverick, on that you're 100% right. And I believe, and here's the good thing about wide receivers, first of all. I don't think Mike Evans is going to be there at 12. The more and more I'm seeing how this draft breaks down, I think he's off the board in the top 8 or 9. to be quite honest with you. I think he's going to be gone before the Giants pick. And if he's gone, to me, if the Giants want a wide receiver, they can get a guy in the second round that could be a very good player in this league if they want to go in that direction. I'm not sure I would, but that is an option for them. In terms of the offensive line, look, if you want to get a starting offensive tackle at 12, whether it's Taylor Lewan or it's Zach Martin, you're going to be able to get one of those two guys at 12. I promise you that. Now, if you want to go a different round and wait to the second round, pick a starter inside, you can do that too. So there are certainly going to be opportunities for the Giants to improve the offensive line depending on how they want to do it and what round they want to use a pick on it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Maverick. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513. Now we're going to be joined by Eric Kennedy for Big Blue Interaction. We haven't talked to Eric since the season's been over. Eric, how's everything, man?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great, Eric. How about yourself? How's the offseason treating you?
You guys have been keeping me busy. The Giants, we got 11 new Giants signed in the last few weeks, 10 re-signing, so 21 transactions in the last few weeks. It's been busy.
Yeah,
so.
I can imagine. Well, how about this? From your feeling, based on what you've seen on the boards and what you've seen going on BBI, which signing do you think has the Giant fans most excited?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I think fans tend to, when free agency first starts, there's angst there about the guys that their own players that they want to re-sign. And obviously, John Beeson, a lot of people were thrilled to have him back. I don't think many people saw them going after Rodgers, Cromartie. I thought that surprised a lot of people, and I think that generated the most excitement, probably because I think when that was first being discussed, it was sort of a pie-in-the-sky type deal, and when they were able to actually conclude the deal, I think that generated the most excitement in terms of getting a potential, you know, impact player or Pro Bowl type player on your defense. I think that generates the most excitement. Though, you know, a lot of fans are still very concerned about the offensive line, so the signing of Jeff Schwartz obviously was a big deal too. So I'd say probably those three guys generated the most excitement.
You know, I think, Eric, the one thing that a lot of people were surprised about, and I, for one, was I was under the impression the Giants would make a couple of quick strikes in free agency, maybe go after one or two key guys and then kind of back off. And as you know, Jerry Reese loves to say there's going to be an evening out and a bargain area during free agency later on. And the Giants' MO is usually to try to pick up some of those guys. To me, the biggest surprise wasn't even necessarily the guys they got, but the amount of guys that they got so quickly. I mean, they just came out guns blazing, and Jerry was firing money all over the place. I would assume the fans felt the same way.
Yeah, I think so, though I do. If you look back at the history of free agency with the Giants, there have been a year here or there where they have come out and spent big bucks right off the bat, and then there will be another year where they just don't have the cap room. But you know, I always remember that year where they went after and got McKenzie, and they got Pierce, and they got Plaxico. That was a big deal. And then if they see someone that they're really interested in, Entrell Rowe or a David Bosch, they'll spend money. But I think you're right. It was the volume. It was, okay, they're done. Oh, no, here's another signing. Oh, no, they're done. Here comes another signing. So I think that was also a function of the fact that, again, they had, it seemed like half the roster was unsigned too. So they had a lot of, I wouldn't say necessarily say it's cap room, because once you sign guys, that cap room disappears very quickly. But I think, you know, there were so many guys that were unsigned that led to a lot of transactions. And as I think fans saw, once you start signing guys, that cap space does disappear pretty quickly. But you're right. I think a lot of people thought, you know, the Giants would target Schwartz. I don't think that surprised people. And I think a lot of Giants fans, at least on BBI, thought Rashad Jennings was a good fit for them. I think that the common theme in a lot of these signings, it seems like, is some of these guys have had really good games against the Giants in the past.
That's true.
you look at Jennings, even though they beat the Raiders, Jennings played very well against them. You look at somebody like Quinton Demps. You look at Dominique Cromartie, Trindon Holiday. These are guys that had some decent games. I don't know if that's just coincidence or that factors into their thinking.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Mike Patterson had some good games against them in Philly, and that's one of the reasons they got him last year.
Yep. So, but you know, it's exciting. It's always exciting when you get new guys. I think the key is, you know, are these guys going to be the players that they hope that they're going to be? You know, we always fall victim to, you get a new guy, you automatically assume you've improved your roster. It's really, you know, a new name doesn't always necessarily mean you got a better player, but there are some really good guys that they got, at least on paper. You know, Walter Thurman is a guy that a lot of people didn't know about, but he's a very good nickelback who could, you know, press for a starting job. And the secondary is obviously dramatically improved. Fans are really worried still about the offensive line, obviously, though.
How about, you mentioned all the new guys they brought in, Eric. How about the guys that they lost? Obviously, Linval Joseph is a big one. Hakeem Nicks is another. Then you have Justin Tuck. What was the general reaction to losing those guys? And specifically on the Tuck thing, did people seem to be angry at the team that they let Tuck go? Did they understand that, you know, he had a better opportunity with a chance to make more money? Were they angry at Tuck for taking the money and not staying? How did you see the fans falling in on the Tuck thing and then on Joseph and Nicks as well?
Yeah, I don't think people were upset with Tuck, and I think they understood it. I think they understood where the Giants' perspective on this was, too. You're talking about a guy who's meant a lot to this franchise, but he has had all kinds of issues with his neck and shoulder. He's at that age when you start breaking down, and I think, you know, there was an understanding that even though he had a rebound year, he had a lot of sacks against the Redskins, and he meant a lot, but this roster obviously needed a little bit of a turnover.
Right.
I don't think rebuild is too strong of a term, but they're certainly reloading. And you look at Tuck, and I think everyone was very appreciative. They would have liked to have seen him stay, but they understood that this was probably his last contract, and it didn't look like the Giants made a big push. Linval Joseph, I think most people understood it was a money issue. I think what bothers people the most there is the Giants have blown so many draft picks in recent years, in the last few years, that when they do get somebody like Linval Joseph, who you kind of figured would be a building block on this team for a long time, to see him go, even though he's a good player, I think that's what sort of sticks in people's
craw
with that, you know. And then Hakeem Nicks, you know, the funny thing is Giants fans are a pretty fickle bunch. A couple years ago, they would have thought, you know, Hakeem Nicks was their favorite player and he'd be here for a long time. But the way he played and the way he handled himself last year turned off a lot of Giants fans. I won't say it's in the same category as a Tiki Barber when he left, but it left a bad taste in people's mouth, and I don't know, people don't know if it was an injury, if it was attitude, contract, whatever it was. Even Tom Coughlin seemed to allude that he just needed a change of scenery. Whatever it was, it turned off a lot of Giants fans, and unfortunately there was almost like a good riddance with Hakeem Nicks. Now, I could actually see him kind of rebound in a new situation in Indianapolis. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. But obviously something was going on last year. And you're talking about a guy that started the whole year except missing one game, and the last time he scored a touchdown was the year before. That's very strange.
Yeah, again, you know, it's funny. You mentioned how the Giant fans have flipped in Hakeem Nicks. At this time last year, when Victor Cruz was trying to come to an agreement with the Giants on a contract, I sat here for hours at a time and had debates with Giant fans on the air, and I'd say a good 75% of them would say, John, if Cruz wants to go, he can leave. We'll re-sign Hakeem Nicks. He's our number one. We'll build around him. And it's just flipped 180 degrees completely. It really is amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's amazing how quickly fans can change their opinion on a guy. And I've been going through the website to sort of clean up some of the old archives, and it's amazing how in a span of a year or 2 years, people's opinions change on a player, a coach, whatever, just based on what transpired in a few games. It's incredible.
Two things, Eric. There's the what have you done for me lately syndrome, which is clearly in play with Hakeem Nicks. And then really, the other thing that I believe that Giants fans have come to realize is that when you miss the playoffs four times out of the last 5 years, regardless of the wins and the success that this team has had over the course of the last 10, you know there have to be changes. And I think that makes it a little bit easier to swallow.
If the Giants are coming off a 12-4 playoff year and they let Hakeem Nicks go, it would be a much different conversation.
Or for that matter, Justin Tuck walks.
Right.
After you made the playoffs last year and people are saying, well, geez, you got to keep these guys together because they're doing something. No, this team needed some retooling. And I think that the fans were smart enough to realize that you couldn't stand pat.
Well, I think they're also smart enough to realize that the record last year, as disappointing as it was even more misleading because they padded it a little bit by playing some awful teams with some awful quarterback situations. So arguably, you know, if they had played a little tougher schedule, this actually could have been a 4-12 team. So I think there's an understanding that, again, they were bad last year, but they're actually a lot worse than the record showed, and that they did need to make some changes here. So, again, I think it's exciting. The Giants haven't been in this position in a while where there's been this much change, this much turnover. It almost has a feel of a rebuilding project. And, you know, we've been sort of blessed and lucky for the last decade to be considered one of the favorite teams heading into the season or in terms of the NFC East. This is sort of a rewind now in terms of, you know, the rebuilding. Coughlin's still there. Eli Manning's still there. They've got a few key guys remaining like Victor Cruz. But this roster is going to look a lot different, and it's going to be very interesting. There are a lot of fans out there, Giants fans out there, that are very young fans that haven't gone through something like this.
That's a good point.
They may have a tough time dealing with this because this is going to be very different. You know, the older guys like us, we've seen people like LT go, like Leonard Marshall go, and then you got older fans who, going way back, that saw Frank Gifford leave and that type of thing. This is a turning of the leaf, and I think it's going to be tough for some of the younger
people. Yeah, Eric, I got to say, it was really rough for Paul Dottino saying goodbye to Frank Gifford. That was really tough for him back in the late 50s.
You know, Eric, I was talking to somebody the other day, and free agency and salary cap, the way we know it now, came into play in 1994.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
I don't remember any offseason quite like this for the Giants, where they signed so many legitimate, productive veterans,
starters
from other teams.
Yeah.
Now they've signed some fringe guys on occasion. They've spent some money, as you no doubt had said earlier, Pierce and McKenzie and Burris that one year.
And
okay,
then
that's Bully, fine.
Boss, Roll, Canty.
Yeah,
those
they've
guys.
Done
right.
some of those things. But to say
right.
they literally went out to the supermarket within the first month of free agency and bought a dozen eggs, and all of these eggs can play. I'm telling you, it's unprecedented. And on top of that, and John, I mentioned this the other day to some of the folks around the facility, outside of Rashad Jennings, who played for Jacksonville and Oakland and obviously didn't win a whole
lot. Is everyone
lot.
Coming off rookie contracts?
No, no.
These, are talking guys, about?
These guys have all won games in this league.
That's a good point.
Broncos, Seahawks, okay, Chiefs. These guys have all – Bears – these guys have all played on teams.
That's fair.
That have tasted the playoffs and that have won something. One of the criticisms that I had last year, John, if you'll recall, when we looked at the makeup of this team, the Giants had a significant amount of players on this team who had never sniffed the playoffs before, either because they were young and inexperienced and hadn't played in the playoffs, or because they had brought them in from other teams that had not won.
Like Brandon Myers, for example.
Bingo. There's something to be said for the kind of shopping the Giants did. It's not just the guys they got, but I think you need to look at that too.
Well, and related to that, the other big change too, you're talking about that turnover, is half the more than half the offensive coaching staff has changed with a possibly a completely different philosophy. So you throw that into the mix too,
that's
and that's
true.
Another wild card too.
Yeah, it's dramatic. These are not grandpa's Giants, I'll tell you that.
No, I don't remember. So to answer to address what you were saying, Paul, I don't remember an offseason like this. Other than, you know, when you have a, you know, completely different, you know, a coaching change, when you go from a Reeves to a Fossil, and then you have a whole different regime.
Yeah.
I don't remember this much turnover in terms of coaches, in terms of players, all in one offseason. So it's going to be interesting. But they've got to get the offensive line fixed. They obviously need a few more weapons on offense because that's changed. That dynamic's changed. And they've got to get some guys rebound here. Like they desperately need Jason Pierre-Paul to play better because of what they've lost on the defensive line. They've got to get guys like Victor Cruz rebounding again. They've got to get some of these guys. And obviously the biggest one is Eli Manning. They've got to get these guys, the guys that they did keep, who are the cornerstone players on this team, to rebound as well, too, and to complement what's going on with in the offseason. And hopefully they'll have a great draft, too.
You know what, John, and my closing thought on this is not just the – and Eric mentioned it about the coordinators changing as well and some of the other coaches. yes, this roster is going to have a significantly different look this season. We already know that. I still don't know how much of an impact McAdoo's going to have.
No one does.
Nobody does. They're still constructing the playbook. The other day, Tom Coughlin said half of the offensive playbook has been drawn up. But they still got another half to go.
The way I see it, look, the players show up in about 3 weeks, give or take, or 2.5, I guess it is, coming up now, where they're going to show up and they're going to start working out and doing their offseason workout programs. Now, I don't believe that the coaches can do playbook work with those guys until OTA starts. So they still have a good, I'd say, month and change until OTA start to get that thing together. But you're right. Nobody knows what it's going to be. I'm not even sure as of a month ago, McAdoo and Coach Coughlin knew what it was going to turn out to be. And I think they're working very closely together, melding their systems, Eric. And I think it'll be probably one of the more, for me, the most exciting offseason I've been a part of in terms of watching OTAs, watching training camp, just to see the type of formation. Are they going to use a lot of pre-snap motion? Are they going to use four wide receivers? I mean, who the hell knows what they're going to do?
You know, right. I know one thing. I don't want to see any quarterback rollouts. Not with Eli Manning, okay? Please do not show me any of that stuff, which, of course, the West Coast offense has a lot of. My issue right now is, we need to find out exactly how much of an impact McAdoo will have. Is he going to totally turn this wheelbarrow upside down, or is he just going to tweak it and bring some things over from the West Coast style? That's critical. And, Eric, you know why? Because and fans are just – every 5 minutes they want to know, well, who are you going to pick at 12? Who are the Giants going to take? How many – here's the thing. I'm telling you the truth. I don't know what McAdoo's going to do. Now, if McAdoo insists, hey, Coach Coughlin, you brought me in here to be your offensive coordinator. I'm telling you, we got to scrap 80% of your offense. We're going to use a ton of West Coast stuff. I don't want any more blocking tight ends. I really want receiving tight ends. Well, you know what?
Right.
Then Ebron from North Carolina is a good pick, because if McAdoo says, that's the kind of guy I have to make my offense work, I need another Finley kind of guy, and I'm not going to worry about the power running game. That's not what I do. That's not what I want. That's not what I build off of. And Tom says, okay, that changes everything.
How much does Reese still believe in Adrian Robinson and Larry Dunno? I mean, those guys still are big, relatively athletic guys who didn't develop as hope last year, but you know, have they looked at these guys, and are they basically writing these guys off, or are they still in the picture? Or because that factors in the Ebron discussion as well. How do they feel about Reuben Randle? I mean, do they think Reuben Randle's a number one? Can he replace Nix? Because if they don't, then you might. I mean, it looks like Evans isn't gonna fall to them, but then you might look at somebody like Evans. What do they feel about Jarrell Jernigan? Was that a mirage at the end of the year, or can he play? I mean, there's so many variables right now that can impact that number 12 pick. So
yeah, Eric, I agree. And final question before we say goodbye, we're joined by Eric Kennedy from BigBlueInteractive.com. And Eric, right now, because I'm getting calls from 4 or 5 different camps. I have an Eric Ebron camp. I have a Mike Evans camp. I have an offensive lineman camp. I have a Aaron Donald camp from Pittsburgh. So I have a lot of people from a lot of these different camps supporting different players at 12. Where do you see the momentum heading in terms of where the majority of Giant fans on BBI think the Giants should go with their first-round pick and how they should generally structure their draft?
Well, the most of the discussion has been regarding Ebron and Evans back and forth. But lately, there's been a charge, believe it or not, with the defensive tackle Donald.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that doesn't really fit the Giants' MO, though. Defensive tackles high, but that usually second, third round type. I don't think you get somebody unless he's obviously an excellent pass rusher, which Donald is, but it just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit their MO. I don't see that. I think they're going to go offense, and I think most Giants fans realize that. The question is do they get the blocker or do they get the offensive skill playmaker for Eli? So, but it seems like Evans Ebron is a popular debate right now.
Eric, we will catch up with you next week. Thanks a lot for joining us, and of course you can go to BigBlueInteractive.com, check out the message boards there, as they do a great job. We appreciate the time, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Eric. Have a good one. 201-939-4513. And everything he's saying he's seeing on BBI is everything that I've been getting on the phone. So clearly there's some crossover there.
You know, it's hard, John, because I'm still married to the old school traditional philosophy of the kind of building blocks that I think a football team needs to win. And the truth is, this may be a whole new era of Giants football. McAdoo may come in here and say, guess what, guys?
Yeah, but
we're going to wing it.
I hear you, but
he might.
In his one interview he's done with Bob Papa, though, and his conference call with the media, he did reference the power running game a number of times in those conference calls. Now, I know saying something and doing something are two completely different things, and, you know, the plan of attack never, you know, lasts through the first bullet being fired in a war and all that stuff, but, you know, I can't imagine they're going to give up on the running game.
There's a perception that the West Coast offense, specifically the places where he's come from, San Francisco, New Orleans,
Green Bay,
use the pass to set up the run.
Correct.
The Giants have always been.
And by the way, Philadelphia has always been that way too with Andy Reid.
For the most part, the Giants, when they've been successful, have used the run to set up the pass, and then the last couple of years,
it's changed.
Because they didn't have the power running game. They didn't have a stout offensive line. Out of necessity, they had to start going to that other style of play.
Yeah, I guess 08, maybe 09 was the last time they really ran the ball to set up the pass. I mean, 2008 for sure. They were the best running game in football that
year. Yeah, I'm going to say when Bradshaw left a couple of years ago.
In 2011.
Actually, 2011.
2011, they passed the ball
to
set up the run.
The year of the Super Bowl was the year where they started to get more into setting up with the passing
throwing
game.
The ball, exactly. Yeah. So you want to say 2010 then was the last regular season?
Yeah.
Okay, I agree with that. I think that's fair.
Yeah. And you saw that start to slowly morph, and it was out of necessity, John. It wasn't that they wanted to do it. They just didn't have the personnel.
Yeah, they just couldn't run the ball consistently enough.
And
100%.
And it killed them in the green zone, as Tom likes to call it. It became a very, very, very big problem. Now, in my mind, you don't fix that by abandoning the traditional old-school philosophy and just say, okay, we're just going to get better at the passing game. I still think that if you want to fix that stuff, you got to go back and fix it and go back to your roots.
So remember, with the right personnel last year, the Packers did run the ball an awful lot with Eddie Lacy. So I think they have shown some flexibility. 201-939-4513. Exactly. You have to have the players to do it, 100%.
And the Giants have needed to revamp their personnel.
Joe in Pennsylvania has been very patient. Joe, thanks for holding, buddy. What's going on?
No problem. Great show.
Thanks, Joe.
Two amigos there. How many safeties and corners are we going to keep if none get hurt? You know what I mean?
Five corners and four safeties.
Well, I'm about nine, yeah. Because we have a flock of them, and that's good, you know. So, but looking at the draft again and that too again, I think we're going to get a playmaker, one of them for sure. I mean, you watch them tapes of last year and that, and Eli threw the ball so many times high, you know what I mean, to the Myers and stuff like that. That's why I find it hard to believe that they're going to pass up on Evans or on Ebron, and we may have that blocking tight end there yet. No, with the Giants, could he be on their roster right now?
Do you really believe that?
Well, it could be. I don't know. Them two guys weren't tested yet, as far as I'm concerned, you know. Paul, you would draft a blocking tight end first?
Well, again, you have to understand. Oh, in the first round? No. I would draft a blocking tight end later on in the draft because you can get them later on. They are less expensive.
Would you pick a two-way tight end that is a good blocker like the kid out of Notre Dame in round two?
Nicholas is my guy. I don't want Ebron. I want Nicholas. Even though you've given up a little bit more in the dynamic passing game, he is so much more all around, much better blocker, sound in every way, shape, and form. And I also don't believe he's going to be a headline monster like Ebron will.
How tall is he, Paul?
Excuse me, I'm choking on my Cheerios.
Nick Loss is about 6'5 or 6'6. Yes. I think he's 6'6, 270, actually.
Yes.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because we need a tall one for sure. You watch them film, so many of them, especially last year, you know what I mean? If Myers was few more inches taller, he would have definitely had a better shot in that. I just wanted to say, too, I see on the NFL Network that they're advertising tonight at 7 o'clock. I guess they're going to be in the Giants war room, draft room. So I don't know what that means.
But, NFL Network is advertising that?
Yeah, I see it there. You know, Giants draft room. You know what I mean? They're going to be in.
Well, I think I gotta set my DVR because that's something I want to see. I don't get to go in there. Neither does John.
Well,
it's true.
Well, I don't know. And I just looking at the division since the Eagles lost Vic. I if I were Jerry Reese, I would have gave the Jets $1 million to sign him. And I hope what's his name Jackson goes to the Raiders. Yet it's not for sure he's going with the Skins the way I hear it. And I just think right now we caught up on the division right now because the Eagles have a lot of questions now, but I'm just so happy we don't have to chase Mike Vick no more. I fear him when he comes in a game, no more Jackson. You go back at a history, the Giants was always chasing guys like Randall, McNabb. Remember that play Randall made on Carl Banks? You know, they always had the playmakers and stuff. So, and I'm hearing that the Eagles made they had a look-see on Evans yesterday. They pick 22nd. The Giants better get a playmaker over the Eagles this year, you know, because they could trade up, you know. So I'm just hoping they do. So that's all I have to say. But I think the Giants are caught up in that division. I think the division's a little more open now with what the Eagles lost. So.
Well, okay, honestly, I appreciate it, Joe. Thanks for the call. I think right now you can make the argument for any one of those four teams winning the division. If RG3 really takes a big step forward, I think the Redskins have a shot. I think there's still questions, especially on the defensive side of the ball for them. The Eagles obviously have a very good team. I think they're right in the mix of first place. If the Cowboys defense can just get anything a little bit better than god-awful, they have a chance to win the division. I think with the Giants additions, they got a good shot, too. I think just like last year, Paul, you can make an argument for any one of those four teams winning the NFC East right now.
I mean,
it's unbelievable.
They're all a work in progress.
Of course they are.
And I don't think that right now I would feel comfortable with that until I know what's happening in the draft.
Of course.
And then, you know, there's stuff to be done.
All four teams have flaws. That's the point.
Well,
they all have issues. Right.
Without a doubt. And how they fill those holes, those potholes, so to speak, will determine their road to success. There's a show called Path to the Draft tonight at 7 o'clock on NFL Network. And what they describe it as is previewing the draft, providing in-depth analysis on prospective draft choices, plus breakdowns of each team's needs. My suspicion, and I'm not speaking officially here, is that maybe tonight their topic is the Giants. I don't think they're bringing a camera down here, and they're getting into the Giants war room.
I can tell you that they have done – the network's been shooting a very long series on the Giants scouting department. So maybe they'll be showing some stuff from that. I don't know.
That would be possible as well. I just don't see them necessarily getting upstairs into that room.
I think that's going to be more of a post-draft thing. 201-939-4513. Let's go to JT in Maine. GT, what's going on?
Hey, thanks, gentlemen. Just wanted to chime in.
Hey, thanks for calling in, JT.
No problem. The last guy kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but I'm going to introduce maybe another camp. I'm a huge Nicholas fan as well. And my thought is, if Evans is there at 12, you really have to think about it. But if not, I think that you can really look hard at moving back, maybe to 18 where the Jets are, because you are hopeful that either Luan or Martin are there. If you can do that and pick up an extra second, that's the key to that, because then I think you can get not only a playmaker at wide receiver in the second, but you can get Nicholas there too. That takes care of three needs. I mean, Moncrief is a guy I think is really under the radar. He's probably more of a third or maybe even fourth round guy that will be there. But I think you can get your wide receiver and your tight end, especially if it's Nicholas. I'm not a Safarian Jenkins fan. I don't think a whole lot of Amaro, especially in the Giants system.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want Amaro either.
Nicholas is the guy in the second. If you can get him and your wide receiver there, move back and take Martin, I think that's the best of both worlds.
Now,
I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts.
Hey, JT, that. Just a heads up. Safarian Jenkins did block a lot of Washington. He was a blocker. He's not quite the blocker Nicholas is, but he certainly did have experience blocking in a pro-style offense as an inline tight end at Washington. So to me, he would be on the board for me in round two. Him or Nicholas, I'd be good with either guy, to be quite honest with you. I think Safarian Jenkins is probably a little bit better of an an athlete, while Niklas is probably more of a physical presence and more of a blocker, like you mentioned. I think that makes sense, but I think if you trade, you mentioned 18, for example, you're really getting to the point where you're running into the risk of Martin not being there. And if you trade down in the first round and you miss out not only on your top tier of offensive linemen, but your top tier of tight ends and wide receivers, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. You were bad last year. You're picking 12. You hope you don't hit pick 12 very often. You got to get an impact Pro Bowl type of player.
Yeah, and the other thing you don't know, too, is the smoke around Lawan. Is that going to cause him to fall back some, too? And you'll know that, I think, when you get to 12. You'll see what some of the other teams have done and if there's been movement from other teams to try to get up in front there.
Right.
But I'm just trying to think of, obviously, to your point, there's a lot of holes to fill. I mean, I think Ebron is exactly what you guys say. In a perfect world where you have the luxury of picking the best weapon, absolutely, he's the guy you go with. I would still take Evans over Ebron either way if they're both there, because I think Evans is going to be a much better pro, and he's somebody you can plug in day one.
Well, the only thing about Evans, remember, he didn't play in a pro-style offense in college, so you don't know how long it's going to take him to figure out the new terminology, run the whole NFL route tree and things like that. So I agree. I think probably Evans overall is probably a better talent than Ebron. I think it's close, but But the thing about it, you can get either a wide receiver or a tight end in the second round. So I think whichever guy the Giants have ranked higher, I think that's who they go for in that spot. And I don't know how they have that broken down. Heck, they don't have anything broken down yet. The scouts aren't back from all their pro days yet. So they don't even have their board set up. So anything we tell you right now is nothing more than speculation.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, JT.
The biggest problem with moving down, John, and I think we've talked about this before, is that there's a lot of folks out there who believe that this draft is four rounds deep, and it's hard to find a trade partner.
Right.
It really is.
I mean, honestly, a couple of people brought up a couple interesting ones. Jets, obviously, in the need for a cornerback. Maybe the top cornerback in the draft is still there at 12, and they go, or maybe they like Denard, whichever guy they like better, and they say, boy, we really need this guy. We're afraid one or maybe both will be off the board by the time we pick at 18. We need to make a move here to move up. I could see that happening. It's a lot of spots.
It's a little far.
No, I know. It's a lot of spots.
It's a little far, John.
But the Jets also have, what, 11 picks in this year's draft? 12?
Oh, they
something
could,
like that?
They could do a deal.
Yeah.
They could do a deal. But if you're the Giants, do you want to go to 18?
I think 18 is this, I think that is the absolute lowest you could think about going. I'm not even sure I'd be willing to go that low. And you figure, this is how I look at it. The Giants and Cowboys aren't making a deal. The Cowboys and Giants aren't helping each other out at 16 and 12. And frankly, the Cowboys are in a similar situation to the Giants where they have so many holes, I don't think they're going to sacrifice future picks to move up in the draft.
I got a deal for you. Let me just...
And the Bears pick at 14. They're going to be able to get a safety or a tackle there.
No, that's where I'm going. I'm going 14 to Chicago.
You think the Bears want to trade up to get
Donald? They want
Donald. They do.
Okay. So now I'm going to tell the Bears.
Especially since they lost Melton to the Cowboys.
I'm going to tell the Bears, okay, you want to swap out 12 and 14 and you'll get Donald.
I don't think you're getting a two for moving up two spots.
Now, the question is, I'm going to check the NFL draft value chart. You guys know all about that, I'm sure.
I think it's about 200 points to go down two spots.
Yeah, but that chart is only there's a premium on first rounders. In other words, when it says 200, you actually have to, here it is. It's if you're pick 12, you're listed at 1,200 points. To 14 is only 100 points, but now there's an extra premium on first round picks. So figure.
Even if you double that, Paul, you're at 200.
I was going to say you might be able to get a third rounder.
I agree.
To move two spots
in
Chicago.
I think you have a decent shot of it. And you know what? Maybe you'll have to throw your six or something like that to the Bears, which is something I would consider doing.
So moving down two spots to get an extra three, I'm okay with that.
What if you're giving up a six back the other way? I would say
I'd probably do that too.
I think that's the type of trade you would look at. And you could probably still get your man Zach Martin at 14. Heck, there's a chance Ebron could be there at 14. That's not out of the question. Out of the question, if you want to go in that direction. And I know some people like Anthony Barr, the linebacker, too. He could be there at 14.
But to give me the extra three for only two spots, I don't think I'm worried about that because I think Chicago's going to get Donald.
Right.
So
if they're going to get him, and I don't think he's going to be the guy on the Giants board at that point, well, then all you have to worry about is what will the Rams take?
And they're not picking a tight end.
That's for sure.
No.
So they need a lot. Rams need a lot. I mean, they could go, like, in any direction. So
they could even theoretically pick a quarterback there if one's still left.
There have been people talking about that, that Fisher might.
You know what?
He wants to trade out, by the way.
And if you pick a guy like Manziel, who probably is a bit of a developmental guy, you know, you have him sit on the bench behind Bradford. If it works out, that's great. You know, if Bradford plays really well and you want to re-sign him, that's great. Then you go and you trade Manziel for a one next year.
Fisher was talking openly the other day that he would love to trade out of that spot, but he knows that he wants to trade out of the number two spot. Let me correct myself, because he's got a 2 and he's got a 14. A 2 and a 13. He wants to trade out of the 2.
Well, he figures someone's going to want to try a trade up to get Clowney.
Right.
Right.
But he also said that there's no way we're going to get the kind of package. They got 4 picks to trade out with Washington.
Oh, for RG3?
For
no,
RG3.
That's not happening.
And he knows he can't get that. So he's kind of bummed out.
He could probably still be able to get a 1 next year and then like a 2.
Yeah.
He could probably get 2, you know, top 2 round picks.
I wonder where he's thinking, though, because he's got a lot of correct directions he can go in.
Look, the one thing they do have is a pass rush, but they need weapons on offense. I mean, they could be a team that could go after Mike Evans. Dude, Paul, they need receivers.
Yeah, they do need receivers.
They need something to go across from Tavon Austin.
They need back 7, too, though.
They do, no. They need secondary help. Like, 13 now would be a pick where they could take one of the 2 corners, Denard or Gilbert, if they like them.
You know?
Certainly.
Look, if I'm the Giants, 14 looks like a very doable spot.
And at 15, by the way, most people seem to think Pittsburgh's going defensive side of the ball with that pick, from what I see.
I would assume so, too.
And Dallas, you figure, is going to go defense, too, at 16.
I don't see you trading with Dallas.
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't think Dallas and the Giants can help each other out.
No, that's not going to happen. And I think I don't think Pittsburgh would move up to 12, because they're probably going to say to themselves,
well, you could have, like, cousins calling each other on the phone and, like, you know, like,
yeah, right,
like father-in-law's calling.
I'll tell you what, we'll make this deal and we'll throw in a Thanksgiving dinner
exactly,
with extra dressing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll host Christmas this year, okay? All right, let's get it done.
That'd be a great trade. All right.
201-939-4513. We have 4 calls on the line. We'll take you 4 guys, and we're going to say ta-ta. Let's say Bobby in New Jersey first. Bobby, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing this morning?
Doing all right, Bobby. Hi. What's going on?
I'm good. I just had a couple quick questions. One I wanted to throw you guys your way is, if the draft, you know, we're talking Ebron, Evans, all these guys, playmaking ability, what happens, and what do you think the chances are happening, who will take, if we have another year where, you know, all this hype about the quarterbacks is a smokescreen, and then, you know, they end up falling mid-round, and all these position players get pushed up?
Well, you know, here's the problem, all right? I had a wise NFL guy once tell me many years ago that even your best friends in the business can be accused or can be excused from lying to you in the month or two leading up to the draft. So how much of this is smokescreen? How much of this is real? You know, here's the one thing I can tell you, all right? And I'm not trying to evade your question. I just don't know that there's an answer. But here's the one thing I can tell you, is that there are a host of positions on the board right now that teams feel very comfortable with, and also believe that there could be as many as 2, 3, 4 rounds of guys that can help you in this league this year. That I can tell you. No one's BSing you about that. There's no bluff about that. There's a lot of talent out there right now. There are not very many centers worthy of a first or second day pick in this draft.
Yeah, you can maybe find a couple guys that'll go in the second or third round, but that's it.
It's not heavy in centers.
Marcus Martin is one of the guys, but there's just not a lot of them.
Okay. I think there's a philosophy nowadays to kind of shy away from first-round running backs.
Heck, you could argue first and second-round running backs.
Okay. I think that's pretty generic. But other than those kinds of things, what do you really know? I mean, anybody could be smoking you right now about anything.
Right.
Because there are so many different players and so many different positions that seem to be stocked that you could really go in any direction. Look, here's the thing. Here's what I tell people all the time when they say to me, you know, how do you handicap this? The only thing that I could say is you look at the strengths of the draft and you say, okay, look, these are going to be really good positions, and if teams really want them, they may be a little bit more willing to wait a round or two to get one. But that's about the only thing you can say with any certainty.
Okay.
I'm trying to be honest with you.
Because, I mean, we saw it happen a couple of years ago, and I just keep – you hear so many mock drafts and stuff. You see, you know, that somebody's got Manziel going to the Browns with their second pick, but then the pro day happens, now he's back up in the top five. Teddy Bridgewater is great. Now he's not. You know, it flip-flops. So I feel like –
well,
you
remember,
know, what's the truth, what's not?
No, Bobby, look, you're right. Things flip-flop. They flip. Here's the way I see it. Things flip-flop in the media a lot more than they do on the actual draft boards for teams. Teams are not moving Johnny Manziel up around because of what he did on a pro day.
Agreed.
Idiot people in the media do stuff like that.
Agreed.
People that work for front offices don't do things like that. So don't let the, you know, media perception make you think that's the way teams are looking at it too.
Here's the one thing that is true, though, my friend, and I mean this wholeheartedly. Because of the numbers of positions that are available in this draft and that are deep in this draft, you're going to get not only media and fans, but you'll even get teams as they're trying to project what other teams will do, flip-flopping guys all over the place because there are that many deep positions in the draft. Look, we just said a minute ago, do the Rams need a corner? Do they need a wide receiver? They could go a number of ways.
And frankly, draft boards, Bobby, could look very different, too, from team to team. That there are so many talented guys that are probably in the same neighborhood in terms of talent and skill. One team might have a guy at, you know, 22 on their board. Another team might have that same player at 41. And it doesn't mean that one team knows something that the other one doesn't. Maybe one team values one skill set more than another. You know, there's just different ways the teams to look at things, and these guys are so close in terms of talent that boards can look very different.
Yeah, I actually heard, you know, not that I agree, but I heard that some teams have Evans more highly rated than Watkins. I guess it's just their preference in wide receiver, but,
yep.
You know, the consensus is Watkins, but, you know, Evans has the height and a different skill set a little bit than Watkins. But if we were at 12, and we have Ebron and Evans there, I get the debate. You know, I think we need a tight end, but the wide receiver, that would be a great number one wide receiver, you know, if he could build towards that in the future. I'm not saying he'll be that right away.
Right.
But with the tight end position, Nicholas and all these other guys, second, third, fourth round, besides Ebron, if we're not taking Ebron as an immediate, you know, like you said before, come in, start right away, you know that's what you're going to get from him. He's going to come in and start right away. We get one of the guys in the second, third round, they might be a little bit more developmental. The free agent market right now, we haven't plucked any of the guys that you heard before the free agency opened.
Yeah, Bobby, real quick, if you draft Troy Niklas in the second round, I believe he's a four-year college player. He's a guy that could start for you right away. But then again, and Ray Viola mentioned this on Twitter, or Roy Viola, excuse me, there's no guarantee he's there in round two either. He could be off the board in the top 10 picks of the second round. There's really no way to know for sure he's even going to be there.
That's possible.
Okay, so you got Ebron and Nicholas, at least different play types, but they could both at least probably start.
Correct.
Day one.
I believe that is an accurate statement, yes.
Then I wouldn't mind taking him as well. I just want somebody who's going to, you know, we don't need another Adrian Robinson behind Adrian Robinson, you know. I know there's a guy out there, the Texans, I think, like, oh, they're tight
end. Owen Daniels.
Yes, he's like a reliable, that's like a typical Giants tight end kind of guy. I was kind of confused that we didn't, you know, pursue that at all, I guess maybe cap situation, but that kind of keeps hinting to me that we're going tight end in the draft.
Well, you know, here's the other thing that I want you to keep in mind, and that's June 1st is also going to be a very interesting day for, I think, a lot of us, because there will be some interesting guys who are going to be cap cuts who are going to be on the back end of free agency.
Oh,
and,
true, yeah.
And so just remember, whatever you see on draft day or the three draft days that will occur in May, teams are not done yet. There will be some more tweaks that happen between the draft and the opening of training camp. I guarantee
it. Oh, yeah. All those June 1st cuts. Because teams can only designate one player as opposed to June 1st cuts. The other guys, they actually have to wait to cut until after June 1st.
Yeah, so maybe we're waiting for guys' stock to fall a little bit, maybe pick them up.
I've been told by a guy, by a veteran NFL guy, the Giants will sign a veteran tight end after June 1st. Now, I don't know who in the world that might be. I don't know who they think is going to get cut by somebody else. But that's what I was told, that people expect the Giants to sign a veteran tight end in the latter part of free agency.
Of course, we were told this about running backs last year. That didn't come to fruition.
Well, I guess Jacobs was sitting there. They could have signed him a lot earlier than they did.
Yeah. I appreciate it, guys. You guys have a good morning.
Hey, thanks, Bobby. Good call. 201-939-4513. Oh, boy. Wow. This is going to be fun. I usually just enjoy letting him rant. I think this guy's going to get Paul a little upset today. Charlie's in Portland, Maine. Charlie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
How you doing, Charlie?
Hi. I'm good, John. Paul?
Hi.
Hi, Zan. Hey, John, kind of cracked me up when you were talking about the Giants' defense is going to kind of do the same thing that the Jets have done, and, you know, with blitz packages, et cetera. And all I can say, and, you know, have a strong secondary, well, that's fine and good, but how many Super Bowls have the Jets been to? And when you're playing somebody like Brady or a really good quarterback, you can put 12 guys back there. If you don't have a pass rush, he'll pick you apart.
Charlie, though, remember, who did the Jets knock out in the playoffs, I think, 3 or 4 years ago with that great secondary in a huge upset?
Who was it? I don't remember.
Peyton Manning.
Well, hey. Peyton Manning is known to lose a few of those
Charlie,
games.
There's more than one way to skin a cat. And if you know that you don't have the bona fide pass rush that you aspire to, the other way to attack a passing game is to dominate a team's wide receivers.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, you know, everyone's always trying to copy the last Super Bowl champ like Seattle. Seattle had a good pass rush. They had a good front rotation of defensive ends and tackles. And right now, we don't have – if one guy on our defensive line, as of this moment anyway, gets injured, say Mankin gets injured, which is not a far-out possibility since we have a ton of injuries every year, what do you have for a defensive line? And if you can't stop the run, you never will have a pass rush.
That's a fair point.
So to me, it's like we've got two big holes there, and we really need to address it. We need to get defensive line help, and we need – hey, if JPP comes back, you know, if he comes back the way he was in 2012 or whenever it was, I can't remember now, but if he comes back, still, they're going to double-team that guy. We still need somebody on the other side that can get to the quarterback.
Charlie, look at Kareem Martin of North Carolina. He would be a good second-round guy. Again, now, I want Nicholas in the second round because I don't want to go tight end in the first round. But if for some reason they wind up going for Ebron, then I'd be very glad with Kareem Martin out of North Carolina in round number two.
And I think there's an outside shot he could be in their third round, too. I think there's an outside shot.
Who do you think is the number one player will be on the Giants draft board? I mean,
they don't have
you know,
one.
They don't have one yet, Charlie.
You don't think Clowney would be?
No, Charlie. Listen.
He would be?
Listen.
I'm
but
just
the
saying.
The Giants go in clusters. What they do is, as they line up their draft board, what they say is, when it gets to our pick, these are the 4, 5, or 6 guys that we cluster together at that value of that pick. And then when it comes time to their pick, it's not about their number one guy necessarily. It's now they have a conversation in the room, and they say, okay, let's split hairs as to these 6 guys that we have or these 4 guys that we have, and let's weigh value and need and try to figure out what it is that we're going to do. They don't necessarily have a clear-cut guy that says he's the best guy.
Charlie, to build on that,
they always pick the best player possible, you know, they never went by need. That's what
need
Reese always
say. Need does factor
saying.
In. Need does factor in somewhat. It's not the overwhelming
Charlie,
factor.
The way they do it, Charlie, when they build those clusters or tiers, they do that solely based on talent. Then
right.
When they break down those 3 or 4 guys that, let's say, have very similar grades, that's when maybe need will sneak in when they decide between the 3 or 4 guys that have very similar grades.
So, in other words, Do you think they? I mean, I remember listening to Shakes last week, and he was saying, "Hey, we should move up and get the best players we can, and not just stack a whole bunch of players." I mean, I kind of agree with him. I'd rather come out of this draft with three players that are going to be possibly Pro Bowl players, or at least start in September 7th, and really contribute, than to have seven players that we're going to have on the practice squad that are going to be sitting on the bench because they're rookies and they don't want to put them in.
No, but Charlie, here's the problem. If you move up, though, you're not going to have three starters because you're trading your second-round pick. So if you're trading up in the first round, you're looking at one, maybe two starters at most. So if anything, if you look to trade up, I think you're hurting yourself in terms of trying to get three starters on the field next year.
I don't think so. I think you could give up a second rounder and maybe give up something next year. You know, maybe.
Where do you want to go? How high do you want to go, and who are you going for?
Well, I would go for a Clowney. I would go for the defensive freak end. That's who I would go for.
Charlie, I get it, and I think Clowney would probably be in that top cluster for the Giants on the draft board because of his talent.
I mean, the Rams want to move out of second, and sounds like the Titans want to move out of first. And, see what kind of deal you
Charlie,
can do.
Charlie, just
be
prepared to trade your 2 and 3 this year, your 1 this year, and maybe your number 1 next season.
Remember something. St. Louis got 4 picks to trade the number 2 so Washington could get RG3.
And 3 of those were number 1 draft picks.
Yeah,
3 of
them.
So
That was a quarterback.
Time out. It's the slot that's traded. It's the slot. You want to pay that much to move up?
You wouldn't have to. If you had to pay that much, then I wouldn't do it. But I don't think you'd have to pay that much, because if the Rams really want to move down,
Fisher knows he can't get
that
price.
Hold on. Fisher
knows he can't get that price again because there's too much talent in this draft and everybody wants to move down. Nobody wants to get up.
Yeah, but Charlie.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Charlie, I hear
still,
you. But look.
It's a lot to pay.
You are looking.
Even if it's close.
You're looking to move up 10 spots. The first thing you're going to have to do is obviously swap number 1 picks from this year, okay? That's the first thing that has to happen. The next thing that's going to happen is that you're losing your second round pick this year. That's the second thing that's going to happen. And the
maybe
third?
Not. Maybe you'll lose a third.
Okay, well, if you're losing a third this year, then you're losing your number 1 next year.
Possibly.
Oh, no. Not possibly, Charlie. If you're moving up from 12 to 2, you're losing your number 1 this year, probably your number 1 next year, and then you can have a conversation of what additional picks you're going to trade.
All right, fine. That's good.
And that's only 3 picks right there, which is cheaper than what Fisher got last time.
Anyway.
Thanks
I think that would be fine. Because if you're going to get somebody like that who could probably be, the Lawrence Taylor or
Whoa, don't throw Lawrence Taylor's name in with Clowney. Clowney is an inconsistent guy who's going to really cause people a lot of headaches. And I'm talking about his own coaching staff, never mind the other teams. I don't want him anyway.
Right. Put him opposite JPP, be incredible.
But
I think what the Giants are going to do, they're going to pick a tackle. If Robinson or Matthews or Luan is there, they're going to go because they need a tackle. You know, we need somebody to back up somebody or start. So I think that's where they're going to go. If they're there, that's where they're going. Offensive tackle.
All right, Charlie. I'm okay with that. I'm already on board with that. I'm old school. I want the offensive tackle.
Thanks, Charlie.
Yeah. Okay, man. Have a great week.
Have a good one. Appreciate it.
Ciao.
Charlie's hilarious.
See,
I
want no part of Clowney. Again, I have issues with his whole attitude and
if
his
motor. If you were sitting there at number 2,
motor.
You wouldn't pick him.
I have his motor, John.
If you were sitting there at number 2 and you don't need a quarterback, who would you take? Watkins?
Wow.
Greg Robinson?
I'm a Matthews guy.
Jake Matthews is a good pick. Too,
I
obviously.
Love Jake Matthews.
No, I mean, he's a guy that the risk on the pick like that is so minuscule. You almost know what you're getting.
I mean, I feel about Jake Matthews like I felt about Ogden.
Oh, okay.
That's how I feel. He's going to be there a long time, and he's going to be a stud.
So Clowney scares you that much?
If I were number 2, I would take Matthews.
All right, fair enough. 201-939-4513. Stas is all the way out in Washington State. Stas, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, John? What's up, Paul?
Hi.
How you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Hey, so real quick, I love Charlie, but sometimes this guy cracks me up with some of the stuff he says. But I don't believe, and this is going to piss Paul off, but let me explain first. I don't believe a power run game is necessary in today's NFL.
Well, you're not ticking me off. I mean, it's just that it's the Generation X philosophy that says you want to get away from that. I get it.
In fairness, it's not even Generation X. Generation X is like the 80s and 90s. This is like Generation Y actually, it's the millennial generation. That's what it is.
But let me explain. I don't say get away from the running game. I think you need to be good in short yardage, sure. Do I think you need a base? All right, let's put it this way. We got 49ers 2011. Was there a better power running team in the NFL? No. They were the best. But when they were in a situation where they were playing from behind, they couldn't win. They could not. They didn't. They had one great comeback game against the Saints that no one thought they were going to do. And you look at when they played us in the conference championship. Their receivers caught two passes that entire game. And what it came down to was what they did the next year. They became explosive. Short yardage and explosive. They went to the Super Bowl.
That's a fair point.
I think that's the formula in today's NFL. You got to be good. You got to be able to pick up. You know, you got to be able to move the sticks, and you got to be able to score fast. Because so many teams are so explosive that if you're running the ball and ground and pound, chances are you're not going to be able to catch up or come from behind. Which, if you look at the 2011 Giants, when they went to the Super Bowl, they had a very good passing game. Their running game was very bad in the regular season, but the running game got better in the playoffs. But why did that happen? Because people were so nervous about their explosion, they started keeping people back, so it opened up the running game. So in the playoffs, our running game spiked because people had to worry about our explosive
play.
If
you give me just a second, I want you to stop right there because that's where I want to touch on this thing. Who were the starting tight ends in the Giants' last two Super Bowl victories? Kevin Ball.
Jake Ballard.
Okay.
Yes.
Would you consider either one of those guys explosive, dynamic receiving tight ends? Yes or no?
No, but...
So do you need one to win a championship?
Yes. Now, in our current formula, you do it. I'm going to explain why. Because we don't have that trio, okay? We don't have a Plaxico Burress. We don't have a Hakeem Nicks, a threat like that right now. I think that Abron is going to give you more mismatches than Evans will, because of one, his positioning, and who he's more than likely going to be going up against, a slot or a linebacker, that he's more than likely going to be either faster or bigger than. And he's going to, because of that, he's going to draw attention. Now, if we had, let's say, Hakeem Nicks still on the roster, I'd say, no, wait till the second round, get a Nicholas, and then, get another O lineman in the first round. Impact player.
I don't want to make too big a deal out of this, but it is a factor for me, and I know that some people out there are probably going to stand on their heads when I say this.
Uh-oh.
But Evans also happens to be a terrific blocker for a wide receiver. And let me tell you something.
Well, I mean, he is 6'5", 235. He better be a good blocker.
There was Ramses Barden was a big guy, too, and he didn't block anybody.
Ramses was not 235.
No, he wasn't. No, he was like 225.
Yeah.
But my point is,
Evans
Evans adds not only the element. I happen to be a huge Evans fan. Not only does he add the element of being a big play guy downfield and a skyscraper, and I love skyscrapers. But the other thing is, he is a terrific blocker. And if you've watched football closely, and again, I'm a traditionalist, you need receivers who are able to block in the running game because they turn those 5-yard carries into 15 and 16 and 20-yard carries. You get a lot of big plays in your running game when you've got receivers who can block.
And by the way, if you guys want to check it out, last Friday, if you go to the Big Blue Kickoff archives, I had a chance to talk to one of the guys that covered Texas A&M last year, was at the Pro Day, had nothing but good things to say about Mike Evans in terms of the work ethic, in terms of how hard he works, in terms of the guy that he is, and very hard worker. So there are really no red flags in regard to that part of his game.
I'd rather have him over Ebron, quite frankly. Again,
I can see that argument.
And just for the record, I think Evans is awesome myself. The only reason why I would pick Ebron over Evans is I think Evans is he will go up against more corners that are trained to handle his size, then Ebron is going to go against linebacker.
It's a fair point. It's a fair
ability.
Point.
That's the only big reason why I'll go towards Ebron.
Yeah,
if
and Stas.
If that wasn't the case, I'd go Evans.
Yeah, Stas, and I agree. To me, the only reason I would go Ebron over Evans is because I think Reuben Randle is a better number two wide receiver than anything the Giants have at tight end. So my choice of Ebron over Evans has much more to do with Giants' need than it has to do with the type of player that they are. If you give me a blank roster and you tell me, do I draft Mike Evans or Eric Ebron, I'll probably take Evans over Ebron. I just think
same.
The Giants have a bigger need at tight end than they do at wide receiver, which is why, at least right now, I would maybe lean a little bit towards Ebron. But frankly, if the Giants got either one of those guys in the first round, I'd be fine.
I agree. Well,
thanks,
Stas, for taking my call.
And by the way, you didn't tick
appreciate
me off.
That was good.
You didn't tick me off. I'm okay with
I'm
it.
Good.
We had a nice conversation.
Thanks, Stas.
I didn't want to. A big fan, Paul.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Stas is one of our more knowledgeable callers. Good stuff.
Yeah, his presentation had a lot of logic in it. It had a lot of good points to it. I do think there are flip sides to the coin.
Of course there are.
And, you know, sometimes you can agree to disagree, or you can come at something from a little bit of a different angle and understand the other perspective as well. I do think one thing we know for sure, and I think everybody pretty much agrees on this part, John, the Giants have to go offensive heavy in this draft. Regardless of what it is that they wind up taking, they do need to be offensive heavy. Because, quite frankly, the defensive line is the only position of the three areas of the defense that needs some fortification. I think, look, if they added another linebacker in the sixth round, I don't think I'd cry, but they really need to go heavy offense.
I'd like to see that. I want to see Paul sobbing uncontrollably at the end of the draft as the Giants pick a linebacker out of Boise State.
Well, I'll tell you what, they got Jaquan Williams in the sixth round.
That's
so
true.
You never know.
Final call of the program is Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, you're hitting cleanup today for us, buddy. What's going on?
Oh, thank you.
What
thank
took you
I'll
so long?
I'll try to hit the home run. Well, you guys are busy today. I tell you, it's great. It's a great show.
Thank you.
Look, you know, great offseason, entertaining. It's a great time. I mean, I'm really getting into it.
Great.
But let me tell you what I called about. 12th pick in the draft. I'm giddy. 12th pick in the draft. Take the phone off the hook in the war room. Don't get greedy. Don't get cute. Don't try to get too smart. Remember what Mr. Mara said about the offense. Trust your scouts. Come on, Jerry. Best player available on offense. I don't care who it is. Offense, 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 offense. That's four. That means first four rounds, guys. Offense across the board.
It would not shock me if their first four picks were offensive players. I think you got a chance to get a defensive end in there somewhere because of the loss of Justin Tuck. But I think Paul agrees as well. This will be a much heavier offense draft than it will be a defense draft.
Oh, yeah. Well, I want first four rounds on offense. And, you know, everybody else can argue about that. But that's where I would lean. And just so you know, right now, today, I'm hoping it's Lawan. Best player available on offense at 12 on draft night. I'm hoping it's Lawan. But it's got to be offense, guys. You know, a couple of people alluded to this, but take the phone off the hook. Let's not get too cute with this thing, huh?
Len, and I agree. The last thing you want to do is move to the point where you don't get that difference-making player that you could have gotten at 12. To me, that is the worst-case scenario that could play out of this whole thing.
You know, when you get caught up in being smart, sometimes you get too greedy. You know, we got the 12th pick in the draft. Monumental opportunity. Let's go get it. Now, one other point that I called about. You know, this is all fun. I tell you, I'm having a great offseason, calling you guys, talking with you guys, dissecting this team. But, you know, on Friday, September the 5th, right before the season starts, your last show, guys, as you're signing off the air on that Friday, you know, what are we hoping for? Here's what we're leading up to. One, let's stay healthy. Two, look, Eli, Victor, Antrell, Jason Pierre-Paul, throw one other guy in there if you want. As Charles Barkley said, stars have to play like stars. These guys, you know, These are all complimentary guys to the stars. Our star players, the ones we're paying, the guys on our team who've gone to the Pro Bowl, they've got to excel. They're the assets. The other guys support.
Yeah, well, then, what you hope, though, is by putting these support people in, it gives these stars a better chance of playing like they can play.
Yes, but these are all complimentary. That's what you hope for. But in the end, you know, we want the stats from those guys. When it's all over, double-digit sacks from Pierre Paul, you know, 3,800 yards, 4,000 yards from Eli, Victor with 90 catches, Antro with 8 or 9 interceptions, all going to the Pro Bowl. If that happens, guys, it's going to be a nice year. But stars have to play like stars. We're paying them. Play like you deserve that money.
Len, it comes down to something that Dan Reeves said many, many, many years ago, and I've used this phrase time and time again. I've stolen it from him. I will give him credit for it. It's about playing above the X's and the O's.
Yep.
There are guys. There are guys who've got to go make a play when you need to make a play. It's not enough to do what's diagrammed. It's not enough to do your job. Sometimes in key spots, you've just got to make something happen.
And if you're a tight end named Ballard or a tight end named Boss, when your time comes, make the play. And I'm thinking about Kevin Boss in that Super Bowl.
Yep.
With that catch down the middle, that huge
catch
down
and run.
The middle. He only caught, what, 32 balls that year. But, man, in the biggest game of his life,
well,
when his time came,
Len,
he made the play.
You don't have to go any further than David Tyree. Did he play above the X's and the O's on that catch?
Oh, my gosh. Huh? Oh, my gosh.
You know?
Oh, my gosh.
And really, really, when you say that phrase, play above the X's and the O's, again, it's simply about making a play when it didn't go as it was designed to go, or for that matter, you went above and beyond to make the play successful.
I can pick that
with a star, too.
I can pick a million examples. How about the Imani Toomer? Simple 8-yard out route that he caught and ran 55 yards for a touchdown against Dallas in the 2007 playoffs.
No
changed
doubt.
The whole complexion of that game.
It doesn't have to be a no-name. It could be a star player.
How about Mark Ingram? How about Mark Ingram?
Mark Ingram against the Bills in the Super Bowl. Perfect example. You had Akeem Nixon.
Greatest 9-yard run in Giants history.
And then you had Akeem Nicks catching that Hail Mary in the playoffs against the Falcons.
Oh.
I mean, it goes on and on.
I'm going to ask you, John, and I'm going to ask you, Len, both of you, take 5 seconds. Give me one time last season one of the Giants made a play above the X's and the O's.
They didn't, and we had this conversation last year. It never happened.
You'd have to say it's
I kept looking for it.
Seconds.
It wasn't there.
Yeah,
maybe. How about end of the game? Antro rolled the pick on Josh Freeman when he kind of went up with the one hand and took it out of the air. Does not. Jason Pierre-Paul against the Packers with the interception touchdown.
Okay, you're right, John. Keep
in mind, where are they? They're all on defense.
How about Hill stealing the ball from Garcon at the end of the Redskin game?
They're all on defense, They're all on defense.
That's true, but and at
definitely
that point
all
of the
on
season,
defense.
I mean, we're out of it. I mean, at that point of the season,
and
we're
out of
it
already too.
And Reuben Randle had that one really nice catch. I forget who it was against. He went over the guy's head, kind of on the sideline, and caught it for a touchdown. But yeah, you are nitpicking here to try to find these types of big plays.
Yeah, there you go.
And if
there
you need a microscope to find those plays, you know, you didn't have a great season.
Thanks, Len.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it, Paul. This was fun.
Bye.
Yeah, you know what, John? It's really interesting to me. At how
we could have went 2 hours today, Bob.
Yeah, right. At how I don't know if volatile is the right word, but how much activity and energy is filtering through this place as opposed to just a few months ago.
I have more energy than I had here in October doing shows, for goodness sake.
That's what I'm talking about. People are now starting to understand how much this place can be energized how great it is. Right, Dan? Dan, our producer, sitting right over here, and he's looking at me like I'm out of my mind.
Paul Dottino, the Energizer Bunny himself.
But you know what? This is the way it should be all the time. And a lot of that energy went out of the balloon last season because of the 0-6 start.
See, this is why that music video is yours. This is why we found your theme song.
This is why I need to kick off as soon as possible.
Paul, we appreciate the time.
Thank you very much.
We'll catch up with you before the draft down the road.
All right, John.
All right. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmoke. Tomorrow, 9:30 on Giants.com. Make sure you're here with us. Have a good one.